White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 471.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with thewareaglereader.com, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Well, John, we took a week off last weekend to get some personal stuff settled and get ready for this one, but our listeners got to hear the first hour of our most recent We Believed. So they've heard us recently, but we're back together for the first time in a couple of weeks. So how you doing?
Doing okay. Like everybody else, just hanging in there, staying at home, doing our thing.
That's it. I posted the 2009 season from We Believed for folks to get to hear. And it ends pretty much after that ridiculous Northwestern bowl game that we've talked about a few times. And so if folks want to hear the rest of it anytime soon, just go to auwishbone.com, become a patron of the show, and you can listen to the whole thing right there on our Patreon website. So what have you been up to other than just work hard work?
I mean, reading a little bit about the potential return of college football. We'll see. But that's probably the other thing of interest to our listening audience.
Yeah, it's I haven't really been able to tell what to believe there, because it seems like even people in authority, I mean, I'm not really paying attention to the pundits that are just speculating, because I mean, they got every right to speculate, but that doesn't mean anything. But the people actually in authority, university presidents and conference chair people, presidents and all that, you know, they're saying wildly different things. So I just don't really know what to believe right now. What do you believe right now?
I think it's too early to know. I think colleges, here's what I know. Colleges are going to make decisions in June about whether students will be back on campus or not in the fall, in August. And that'll be a big decision point for the college football season.
Yeah, I think if things continue the way they are now, I could see them coming back and either playing a full season or a partial season, maybe starting later or something. I worry about not having spring practice. I mean, I realize that it's the same for everybody, so it wouldn't be necessarily an advantage, although arguably it would be an advantage for teams that had experienced players more, because they've already practiced together for, you know, years, whereas, you know, if you're bringing in a rookie quarterback, you know, that's never played before, that's a tall order.
No, I agree. That makes sense to me, but, I mean, we don't know anything right now. I think it's... No. It's just mostly hope.
Well, I know that, like, for example, IndyCar is coming back in a couple of weeks, and Formula One's coming back in about a month. NASCAR has already come back. No surprise, they're going to be the ones to most, you know, in those areas to most want to go ahead and do that. And then, you know, beyond that, it just really becomes like, will there be people in the stands or not? What happens when the first team has a bunch of players get sick or get, you know, even get testing positive? I mean, do you tell that team you can't play anymore, but everybody else gets to? Do you quarantine them and every team they've played the last couple of weeks? What does that do to those teams? I mean, it's like dominoes could start falling so easily with this. That's what I haven't seen anybody address so far. They keep talking about getting it started, but nobody's addressing what happens as soon as you get it started and you get about two or three games into the season and then somebody starts testing positive. And, like, I mean, let's just say, for example, that the whole Texas A&M team, like 80% of them suddenly test positive and they've all spread it to each other. Well, nobody's going to want to play them. So what does that do to the team's schedule? Like if LSU was getting ready to play them that week, they just don't play a game. And what happens?
Texas A&M has to forfeit.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't seem fair. I mean, but and then they may not get to play the rest of the year. And then suddenly some teams have played seven games and some have played six and some have played eight. And then, It's just, you know, it just, to me, it seems like a whole bunch of dominoes waiting to fall. Because, I really feel like they're trying to do half measures, which I understand, because you want to satisfy those that feel like this is a super dangerous thing, of course. But they're also trying to satisfy people that say it's not that big a deal. We need to play football or the universities are going to go broke and this, that, and the other. They're trying to kind of have it both ways. And I honestly just don't know if you can have it both ways. They're really trying to thread the needle. And I don't know if you can do that. I feel like you have to pick one or the other.
I think the only way to do it is to do it safely, where you know, the players come back, they're all tested regularly, and you know, before they get back, and then when they get back, and while they're back, there's regular kind of random sampling tests, and if anybody's positive, then they're isolated, and the people that are rooming with them and probably even working out with them are isolated for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, and that's the deal.
Man, just imagine if this was like 2010 Auburn and we got to like week 9 and then Cam tested positive and he was fine. We had to hold him out against Georgia and Alabama or something. I mean, I feel like you either go 100% on this or you go zero. And I'm not advocating either way, honestly. I mean, lest our listeners think I'm advocating something, I'm not. I'm simply saying, if I was in charge, I would say we're either doing it 100% or we're not doing it at all. Because either you think this is super dangerous, in which case don't do it at all, or you think it's not, in which case don't worry about it, just do it. And I mean, I just feel like trying to have it both ways is ultimately just going to be extremely frustrating and unsatisfactory to everybody.
Well, I think we should get used to that for a while then.
I think you're right. Okay. Well, one other little interesting tidbit. What we're doing tonight, by the way, is, you know, we've been over the last few weeks watching great, interesting Auburn games from previous years before we had our show starting in 2012. And we've looked at everything from the West Virginia Rain game to the Arkansas 2010 to the Alabama sack, honk if you sack Brody game, the LSU interception game. I think that's the four we've done so far. Mm-hmm. And tonight, what are we going to look at?
2006 Florida at Auburn.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. This is another one of those weird ones where strange things happen, particularly late. So that's going to be a lot of fun because it's the first of two games that we ever played against Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow. And, of course, that goes down in Auburn history, Auburn lore, that, you know, what happened when Auburn played those guys a couple of times. So we're going to be talking about the 2006, also known as the Pontiac Game-Changing Performance of the Year, which it won. And also, I had to note, since we're talking about Auburn, Florida tonight, I just today finished writing my new crime novel, Miami Heist. It's the second volume in the series that began with 2018's Vegas Heist. And it's the same characters. They're now in South Florida. But I had to note, John, that during the in the middle of Vegas Heist, I had a scene where I kind of like did a tribute to the original Ocean's 11. You know, we all know, right? It's on my soundboard even, that there's a famous, I didn't even look for it till now, but there's a famous moment. Oh, here it is. There's this famous moment in the original Ocean's 11 with Frank Sinatra and Angie Dickinson where they're getting on the elevator and Frank Sinatra says,
"I got great news for you.
Auburn beat Alabama by 12 points.
No, this is important, honestly."
And I love that. I just love that. That in the great Ocean's 11 movie from the 60s with Frank Sinatra and Angie Dickinson and Dean Martin and all of them and Sammy Davis and all the Rat Pack, they mention Auburn beating Alabama. I love that. So in the middle of Vegas Heist, I actually have, which is set in 1965, I had Auburn beating Georgia by how many ever points that they beat them by. I just had to put that in there. And a lot of our listeners have read the book and have noted it, and people said stuff to me. So I had to keep the trend going. So in this one, it's 1966, and Auburn is playing at Gainesville against Florida. And this would be the infamous Steve Spurrier game. Do you remember this one or anything about it?
Didn't he carve us up?
Well, he's not remembered for this game for his arm.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember what he did? It's kind of obscure.
Did he kick field goals too?
They had a regular field goal kicker that kicked 30, 40-yard field goals, but it came down, they were trailing by one or two in the last second, and they start to send the coach starts to send the kicker out, and Spurrier's like, nope, I'm going to kick it. And he went out and kicked it like a 50-yard field goal, and he went out and kicked it himself. He just didn't trust the kicker to do it. The quarterback had to go out there and kick the field goal. Can you imagine if Cam had at the end of the Oregon game in 2011, if Cam had told Wes Byram, nope, go sit down, I'm going to do it. We'd all been like, okay, he's Cam, why not? You know,
he can do it.
He can let him do it. Why? Who's going to say Cam can't kick a 20-something yard field goal? Come on. I want to see who can say that. So he probably put it through the back of the stadium. So that was the famous one. So it's not a highlight spot, but it's such a famous moment, you know, in Auburn, Florida. And it was that year I had to do it. So I have him listening to that game on the radio. So anyway, I just had to point that out. I thought that was fun. So let's get into 2006, Auburn and Florida. So we were going to talk about the teams first. Let me address you want me to address the Auburn team first. Let's see. Well, I was actually at this game. It's funny. This was 2006. We hadn't played Florida since 2002. You know, we had stopped 2002, I guess, was the last year we played them. Every year? Yeah, I think 2002 was the last year we played them every year when they changed the way the schedule worked. And mm-hmm. So, you know, we had dropped Tennessee immediately in 92 when they split the conference. Tennessee was the first casualty. But we kept Florida and Georgia, and then after 2002, they mixed it up again and we lost Florida. So all we were left with from the East was Georgia.
You went to one permanent opponent.
Yes, after 02, right. And so we hadn't played them in 03, 04, 05. And I used to love the Auburn-Florida games. They were always so good. And so I had just moved up here to my place I live now, this area, like the month before. And I just bought a plane ticket. I've never done this before or since, but I actually flew from St. Louis directly to Birmingham, to the Birmingham airport, God help me, and rented a car and drove down to Auburn. And by the time I did all that, I'm like, man, I could have just flown to Atlanta and driven over from there much faster than driving from Birmingham. I didn't realize it at the time, but I do now. And so I was at this game because I knew we could win. I felt very good. But Florida was, I think, rated like number two maybe in the country in this game.
Yes, yes.
And but we were on a kind of a streak. In fact, let me see. We had had a bad game the week before. But going into this game, Auburn had won 7 of its last 8 games against top 10 teams. Auburn had won 7 of its last 8 games against top 10 teams. You know, a number of those in 04, obviously. And I'm sure, you know, one or two here, there in 05 and 06. We had a really good year in 06. So I flew down to watch it. Loved every bit of it. This was an Auburn team coached, of course, by Tommy Tuberville in his 8th season. The offensive coordinator in his 3rd year was Gorgeous Al Borges. The defensive coordinator who came back starting this season for a 2-year run was Will Muschamp. And our quarterback was Brandon Cox, who had been injured all. He had a knee injury. He was kind of, you know, but he had still had 63% completion rate. Understanding this was his first year where almost all of those great receivers that came in 2002 were gone. He didn't have Obamanu anymore. He didn't have Roma Shadu. He didn't have Mix. The only one of them he was left with was Courtney Taylor, along with the new ones like Rod Smith and Preche Rodriguez. Our backfield was Kenny Irons, but he had been injured all season too, a turf toe, and couldn't play very well. Backed up by Brad Lester, who'd also been injured. Carl Smith was our was our fullback.
I think it was Carl Stewart.
I think I was trying to type Rod Smith and Carl Stewart at the same time, and then Tommy Trott, the great tight end. But like I said, we'd lost all those great receivers. On the defensive side, you're going to like this defensive bunch. A lot of these were left over from the 04 team. You had Quentin Groves, Marquise Gunn, Sendarik Marks, Karibi Didi, Will Herring, David Irons in the backfield, Aaron Savage, Trey Blackman, the little ball of hate, and Eric Brock. That's not a bad lineup for an Auburn defense, is it?
No, I love that defense. And especially it was a defense, you know, that defense coached by Muschamp.
Yes. you had a very solid defensive line, you had some decent linebackers, and you had a pretty darn good defensive backfield. So it wasn't the greatest defense in Auburn history, but they could bring it. They could get the job done. So this was the first time we had played Florida since 2002 in Gainesville. And it's interesting because that was the game, that last time we'd played Florida was the game that Cadillac Williams got hurt in the first half. And it was really remembered as the game that Ronnie Brown just had his coming out party and just, you know, went all over the field on Florida. That was the game where we said, well, we may have lost in overtime, but Ronnie Brown looks like the real deal. So we were looking to reverse that one-game slide. Now, tell us a little bit about Florida.
So this was 2006 Florida. So Urban Meyer's the head coach. Dan Mullen was still the offensive coordinator. They had the two-headed monster at quarterback, Chris Leak and Tim Tebow.
Yep.
And Tebow wasn't, you know, what he would become later, but he was still very dangerous. They had Percy Harvin was other big weapon, running back, receiver, kind of do everything guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they had really good defense and some really good defensive linemen. They had Reggie Nelson and some other guys in the defensive backfield. But they had some really solid defensive linemen. Deshaun Wynn was the big kind of bruising running back. They were a really talented team. Brandon Spikes was a freshman on this team on defense.
I remember a lot of good players. I remember Dallas Baker as their receiver catching a lot of balls too.
Yeah, he was Leak's favorite target. And again, Leak was the thrower.
Mm-hmm.
And when Tebow came in, it was almost every time a run. He was a freshman, and they were not bringing him in to let him throw the ball over the place. He was in there to run it to be the power.
Because he was really, I mean, when you look back at, and I remember them saying during the play-by-play that like the one ingredient this Florida team didn't have was that their only real power inside game was Tebow. But if you're using him exclusively that way, you're tipping your hand. You know what I mean? Like when Cam was in, he was both the inside power and the passing game both, whereas Florida had it divided up among two players that really couldn't be on the field at the same time. So you knew what was coming depending on really which quarterback was in.
That's right. It made them predictable, which I think Auburn and Muschamp were really ready for.
Now, Auburn had just lost the week before. Yeah, I was going to say, the preparation Auburn, this was a time period where Auburn was really preparing well every week. The exception, of course, being the week before this game. I'm surprised I didn't sell my ticket and cash in my airline ticket or something, because Auburn had just lost the week before in the infamous game to Houston Nutt was the head coach, but Gus Malzahn, I can't ever say it right anymore, was the offensive coordinator, and they killed us. I mean, this was a good Auburn team that had been undefeated. I believe they were undefeated when they played Arkansas. We were in like the top five looking at trying to get to the BCS again. I mean, we were thinking this was a serious, you know, the 2006 team ends up going on, and they only lost two games all year, this one and Georgia, I believe. I mean, they didn't lose this one. I meant the one we're talking about, Arkansas. Yeah, they lost the Arkansas game and lost to Georgia. That was it. So this was a good Auburn team. I still don't know how they lost that Arkansas game. But, of course, I also don't know how they lost to Arkansas in 2001 or 2002 either. So,
the Hog Hex.
It is the Hog Hex. It is. We've written books about it. All right, so let's get on into the game a little bit, unless there's anything else I'm forgetting.
No, let's go.
Well, just to zip right along here. So Auburn starts out kind of hitting little short passes to Kenny Irons, to Rod Smith. Irons had an injured leg, had the turf toe, but he was running hard and he was churning. He was a tough runner. We talked about him before. Kenny Irons is, I mean, you know, if it was one of those things where you're drafting a fantasy team of historic players and you could probably get Kenny Irons a lot cheaper than most of the great Auburn running backs, man, I would do that. You know what I'm saying? I would put more of my virtual money into like a defensive line or something and get Kenny Irons cheap. He would probably be undervalued, and you would get a lot of value out of him because he was tough, man. Tough.
Made plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not the hugest guy, but just tough. So they did all various kinds of runs and passes, did a little flare pass to Carl Stewart. There's Carl Stewart, down to the 4-yard line. Cox fumbles and recovered on the 9. The Florida defense holds, and we get a field goal. You might as well get used to that, not seeing the offense actually punch it in. So it's 3-0, Auburn.
It's a larger theme here, this time period, you know, 2006, 2007, 2008, kind of the decline of the Auburn offense as a especially with these receivers gone, as a devastating kind of big play offense.
That is correct. But you also see Tuberville's strategy that he used a lot over the years showing very strongly in 2006 in particular and in this game, which is ball control, run the clock. I mean, he really was the opposite of Gus in 2013, 2014. Ball control, run the clock, keep the other team's defense on the field, their offense off the field. And just, the game we always talk about is that South Carolina game, which I believe was this season, 2006. The 2006 South Carolina game, Auburn had the ball the entire third quarter. South Carolina never snapped the ball in the third quarter. That's so Tuberville, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's what he did here. 13 plays, 85 yards, 6 minutes before Florida even gets the ball, and it's 3-0. And we had good kicking in this game for the most part. Florida had to start pretty deep. They start their own 20. And so Leak is again running and passing, run up the middle. And they get down to our one. Percy Harvin, they get down to our one. We stuff their running backs twice, and they have to kick a field goal. Now, this shows that they didn't have much of a running game, and we were really geared to stop their run and make them pass in this game. Would you concur?
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of a defensive game.
Yes.
Like, neither offense did a whole lot in the total game, and I think our defense really did a great job against them. They were a really good team, and we were well prepared for what they were trying to do.
Well, they were on the 1 yard line and ran two plays and didn't get anything. And the funny thing is, this is the Florida game, which is not historically one of the earlier games we play, and it must have been October, right? Yeah, this is in October, and their field goal kicker was 0 for 4. This was the first game in which their kicker made a field goal the whole season.
That is bizarre.
That is crazy. So he was now 1 for 5 after making that kick against us. All right, so we got Tristan Davis. Remember him, John?
Oh, yes.
Tristan Davis, running back, kickoff. He runs it out to the 23. So Cox is passing. Kenny Irons is running. But they get a big sack on Cox, and they have to punt. So Florida takes over at their 30. We got Trey Blackmon in at linebacker, a little ball of hate. Getting some pressure on Leak. They're saying, I remember, wasn't it Tuberville that said Leak's a good passer, but if you pressure him, he does make mistakes.
Yeah.
So that was the plan. Put pressure on Leak. He had a wide open receiver for a touchdown, and he missed him out of bounds. But then he comes back and hits Dallas Baker with a great catch over Will Height, who was just too short to be covering Baker. So in 8 plays, 69 yards, it's 10-3, Florida. Now, around in here, the second quarter started. I missed the transition. I think it was maybe doing the commercial or something. So they kick off to us again, and here comes Tristan Davis, a 58-yard kick return to the Florida 38. That's what we need, right? Because this is going to be a game of special teams and defense.
We talked a lot about special teams last time. We're going to talk a lot about it again, and here's the first huge one from the special teams.
That's right. Probably a lot of the same players from the Hushack-Brody game to this game, yeah.
Yep, that's right.
So Davis takes us to the – we start on the Florida 38, but Cox immediately gets sacked to the Florida 45. So Brad Lester comes in at running back, and he gets the ball to the 28 for a first down on a screen pass. Florida jumps off sides. I believe they said Florida was like the most penalized team in the country at this point. So yes. now we're on the Florida 23, and then Cox gets sacked again. It's kind of like we take one step forward and two steps back. We're sacked to the 30. We get an 18-yard pass to Rod Smith to the 18, and then we hit Tommy Trott to the 5, and he fumbles. Are you kidding? And Florida recovers at the 2.
It's 10-3, and he fumbles. Like you think he's going to score?
We've been like what, inside the Florida 10-yard line now twice, and we have 3 mm-hmm. points. You don't upset the number 2 team in the country. Seemingly, right? Theoretically, you don't upset the number 2 team in the country by turning the ball over or settling for field goals inside the 10-yard line. So Florida starts the 2, but they hold in the end zone, giving us a safety. So you already see, okay, this is going to be one of those games with a weird score. Oh, it is. You ain't seen nothing yet. So it's 10-5. 10-5. Yeah. Yeah, most penalized team in the country, and they just got a penalty for a safety, so it's 10-5 for holding. So they kick off, and we get out to the 36. And I like this. They asked the CBS guys or ESPN or whoever it is. They asked the Aflac trivia question, which was, how many times has a one-loss team played in the BCS National Championship game? And I jumped out of my seat and said, well, how about how many times has a no-loss team not played in the BCS Championship game? That's what I want to know. How many times has nothing not played? So I think we know the answer to that one, at least back then. So let's see. So Irons gets a great run for about 13 yards up to the Florida 40 – or 15 yards to Florida 49. And I noted we're not scoring, but the offense is doing enough to keep Florida's offense off the field for the most part and to keep the field position maybe not in our favor, but not really in theirs either. In other words, we're not – you know, we had the one series that we started in their end, but they haven't exactly been starting on our goal line either. They had to start way back on their own two or whatever and then got the safety. So it's – you know, in some ways it kind of reminds me of the Auburn-Oregon National Championship game where it really became about – field position, and even when you don't score, you turn around and get a safety on them down the goal line. You know, it's kind of reminds me of that.
And it's true. It was big in field position because we didn't let them, you know, they wanted to keep the ball with their offense and control it and get it over into the field, and we weren't letting them do it.
That's right. So, let's see, swing pass to Irons down to the Florida 35. Here comes our third attempt to try to get some points on them. Irons now, not David Irons, Kenny Irons. I get my Irons is in the fire mixed up. Kenny, I have too many irons in the fire, John. Kenny Irons has 7 carries for 44 yards and 2 catches for 18. I made a little note here, and I wanted to ask you about this for a second. We talked about it a little bit before. Is he one of the most underrated running backs in Auburn history? What do you think?
It's fair, because it was...
He had some great games.
Yeah, that LSU game.
Oh, man. We didn't always win is the thing, I guess. But he had some great games. And when he was healthy.
I was going to say, he was banged up a lot. But like 2 years mm-hmm. as the primary ball carrier, right?
Yeah. 05, 06.
I'm thinking about. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to. It doesn't help him that he followed the greatest running back backfield combination in decades. You know what I mean? He came in the year after Cadillac and Ronnie and Jacobs and Trey Smith.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
By himself, kind of with Brad Lester as his understudy, he had to replace these legends.
That's a tough place to be.
Yeah. So, all right. So Lester comes in, rips off a great run. Lester was an interesting back. What do you think about Brad Lester? What memories do you have of him? Let's talk about these backs for a second.
I like Brad Lester. I think he had a good mix of power and speed. I thought he was productive. And it was one of these, I think he's kind of a what-if Auburn guy, like, why wasn't his career better, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, he kind of was the second guy behind Irons for those 2 years, and then I think he was hurt some, and he was a little more gangly, you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't built like a James Bostic,
yes.
or a Ben Tate. He was more, and he, I was going to say, he had a little bit of maybe, and Kenny Irons did too, had a little bit of oh, crap. Our recent running back that went, Kerryon Johnson. Had a little Kerryon Johnson, but not as thickly built. You know what I'm saying? He was a little more skinny. And that's just not a great – when you're taller and thinner, a little more skinny, I guess Lester kind of reminds me of those backs we've had that we threw the little swing pass to the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
The taller, skinnier guys that just really just make a good target for the defensive players sometimes, sad to say. So yeah, he was good at the draw plays up the middle. He could rip up the middle real quick, but he was not a great sweep back. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Okay, so Florida's defense had been averaging giving up 56 rushing yards a game. That's not too bad, but midway through the second quarter, they've already given up 52 to us, not including all those sacks on Cox. So we're probably, you know, not counting the sacks, we're probably pushing 100 yards rushing before halftime on a defense that gives up 56 yards a game. So you can see that the plan was run and stop the run. I mean, I know that's trite, and that's what everybody wants to do, but that's certainly a big Tommy Tuberville thing, and I would say it's fair to say that at this point in the game, we are running somewhat, and we are stopping their run. And that's why it's only 10-5, and it really should be much more than 5 for us.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, all right.
I mean,
so,
just run and stop the run. That's like verse 1 in the Tuberville Bible.
It is. Yes. Amen, brother. We had some pipe organs for you. So it's 3rd and 6. Cox hits Courtney Taylor to the 8 for a first down. We're inside their 10 for the third time. And so I noted that so far we have 3 points. So you're like, oh, this is – all right, we're on the 8, right? This is time we're going to do it. And then Cox gets sacked again to the 14. So he kick another field goal. That's 3 times inside the Florida 10, and we've got 6 offensive points for it. It's starting to feel like the 94 LSU interception game, I'm afraid. But because of our defense, it's only 10-8. The defense has held them to 10 and scored 2 points. All right, so Florida, we kick off. Florida starts at their 20, another good field position swing. I like this, by the way. Holly Rowe has a little story here about how David Irons, it's kind of like, you know, in Van Halen, Alex Van Halen was originally the guitar player and Eddie was the drummer. And Alex wanted to play with Eddie's guitar. So Eddie's like, all right, Eddie wanted to play with Alex's guitar. So Alex is like, well, I'm going to go play your drums. And they swapped because the grass is always greener, you know, with somebody else. So David Irons was the running back, and Kenny was supposed to block for him, but Kenny wouldn't block very well, so finally they moved Kenny to running back so that David would block for him, and Kenny said he figured out, just block poorly and you get to be the running back. That may be why he didn't start the Georgia Tech game in 2005, by the way.
That's not winning any points from your brother either.
No, I'm sure David wouldn't have. David ends up a defensive back, so... all right, so there's a personal foul in Auburn. Florida's out to the 49. Percy Harvin does a running all over the field play, one of those crazy scat all over the field plays. Ends up down the sideline to our 12. Tebow comes in at quarterback and just runs right up the middle 12 yards untouched. I don't know how you run as the quarterback up the middle untouched. When Cam would do it, he would have to run people over. But Tebow just walked right up the middle, and there was no defense there, and he scored. So this is probably my lowest point in the game. It's 17-8, Florida, and I'm sitting there thinking, man, we're not even, you know, we're stopping them overall, but when they get a chance to score, they're scoring touchdowns, and we're kicking field goals. You know, it feels like we're bringing the knife to the gunfight.
That's right. I mean, they have 2 touchdowns, and we have 2 field goals, and...
That's not good.
That's the story.
Yeah. So I think that's supposed to be Tristan Davis returns the 27. We get a good pass to Courtney Taylor to the Florida 47. Oh, I did look up what became of Courtney Taylor because I've always said he's one of our 3 or 4 greatest receivers in terms of the plays that he made, not just in productivity but in key plays and big plays. He played 1 year for the Seahawks and then 5 or 6 years for British Columbia in the CFL. So it really does show you how hard it is for even really good receivers to catch on for a long time in the NFL. They just cycle through receivers constantly in the NFL.
Yeah.
So Lester has another great run. He's ripping off. Again, Lester's not a guy you pound between the tackles, but every now and then you put him in there and he'll get you a 15, 20-yard big play.
So I think you made a good point earlier. He's a good change of pace back.
Yeah, that's fair, yeah. So there's 1:25 to go in the half, and we're inside the Florida 20. We throw a pass to Rodriguez to the 12, and we are deep in their red zone. And then guess what? If we're deep in the Florida red zone, it's time for what, John?
Another sack.
Another sack. I need a sound effect for Cox getting sacked. So another John Vaughn field goal. And it is now 17-11, Florida. And if Florida goes on to win this game, I would be saying that the key to Florida winning this game was the way their defensive line controlled our quarterback in the red zone.
Mm-hmm. And just how we moved the ball kind of between the 20s, but in the red zone they stiffened up and we did nothing.
Yeah, because the total yards at this point, 222 for Auburn and only 194 for Florida, and yet... We've had 4 trips into the red zone. We got 9 points. And this is what made me laugh because it made me think about, you know, for a couple of years there, that's kind of what Auburn was doing under Gus, is we would get down the red zone and sputter out and have to kick a bunch of field goals. And I was just thinking that that seemed like the end of the world to us, you know, just a couple of years ago. But that was not anything new. We were doing that under Tuberville in 06, 07, and 08. So, yeah, Vaughn kicks off again. He's putting them all in the end zone. Florida keeps having to start at the 20, and that gets us to halftime. So, what are your thoughts so far about this game that we are currently losing 17-11, I believe.
Well, I mean, we're playing the number two team in the country at home, and we're squandering our opportunities.
Ugh,
like we have opportunities to make stuff happen. You know, we put ourselves, we get down there in good field position, and we can't take advantage of it. You can't beat a good team wasting chances.
No, you can't. You can't. So, let's see. It's halftime. This seems like as good of a time as any for me. I think I will thank our patrons now, and then we'll pick up with the second half, and you'll see all the crazy, exciting stuff, including the Pontiac game-changing play of the year. So we have to thank our patrons. You get to hear shows like this, assuming you're enjoying it, because of the fine folks who have gone to www.auwishbone.com, and for as little as a dollar a month, although we appreciate whatever you wish to give, you can help keep our show on the air, pay the expenses to keep us pumping out these great shows. The folks that are doing that now, as of this moment, include Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson, along with Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, William Lynn Matthews, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. And then we have William Morgan, Emmanuel Seaman, WDE Richie, Winston Boddy, Clinton Stewart, and Christopher Stewart, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Alchemist, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, and Rich Reimer. And then we have Sarah Hines, Darris Benton, Rob Morgan, Blake Heron, Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling, Kevin Kenoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Shane Bailey, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. Take a breath then. And finally, we have Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Mick Vigicana, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson. I pronounce Kevin's name different every week, and I realize that it's not on purpose. It just kind of happens. Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Chris Brant Rumble, and our one-time and anonymous donors. Go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the big orange button to sign up, be part of the family, hear your name on here, and get to do things like listen to We Believed weeks before the public, and get to participate in all the things the fantasy leagues we're not getting to do right now. Our show has become kind of a fantasy league, interestingly enough, hasn't it? So, shall we kick off the third quarter, John?
We shall.
All right. I noted, by the way, the game day crew was there. That's interesting.
And,
so here,
Can I tell you what happened in the game day set? Do you remember
this? Yes.
Barkley called in.
I love it.
And Charles Barkley predicted that Auburn would win, and he predicted the exact final score.
Good. Well, all
on
I can
the pregame show.
All I can say is.
And March Madness, let's shock the world.
I'm glad I had a chance to use that tonight. I didn't come into this show thinking I'm going to get to use the Barkley Final Four sound clip. But, you know, I'll take it. That's fine. So that's awesome. Guys, is there anybody better than Charles in the world? He's just the best. So, all right, here's your stats. Auburn has 82 rushing yards and 139 passing yards for 221 total. Florida has rushed 13 times for 140 yards. I'm not quite sure. They've thrown the ball. They've completed six passes, which seems like a low number to me. In the entire first half, Florida's completed six passes for 54 yards, so a total 194 yards of offense. I'm just not quite sure how they rushed for 140 yards. It was a subtle.
Well, again, the huge Percy Harvin reverse.
Yeah.
That was
big of it.
50-60 yards right there.
Yeah.
And the Tebow run was 12 yards, and then they had a couple others.
And of course, we have minus 33 from all of Cox's sacks in the red zone, which makes me pull my hair out. So, but here it is, though. Here's the statistic that shows you that Tubbs' plan is working, okay? Time of possession, Auburn 20-26, Florida 9-34. We had the ball over twice as much as they did in the first half. That is like vintage Tubberville right there. So we ran 22 more plays than Florida. That is so Tubberville. So let's get into the third quarter and see if it pays off. Florida against kick off. They start their 20. Can't say enough about John Vaughn's kickoffs in this game. The crowd's going bananas. I can attest to that because I was there yelling. So Florida comes out and they pass to Dallas Baker to the 33. Another one of these Harvin runs all over the place, but this time we hem him in and get him down for no real gain. When he reversed his course, though, Quentin Groves got blown up. I had to make a note that you don't often see Quentin Groves get blown up on the football field, but he just got blindsided by a block when they did this reverse. So that's something you don't see every day. But on the next play, he gets his revenge, gets a huge sack on Leak on third and long. And by the way, getting pressure on Chris Leak is something that's going to be important as this game goes along. So Florida comes out. They don't get anything going on their first possession, and they have to punt. And, John, what happens next?
I mean, we have to say that the sack by Groves was a gigantic play in the game because it sets up what happened
next. It does.
Florida has to punt from deep in their own territory. They line up to punt. The punter drops the snap. He picks it up and attempts to get a punt off, and in that moment, he's hit by about three Auburn guys. Yes. The ball is batted down, and Trey Smith picks it up and does a forward flip into the end zone.
That's beautiful. And that is your game. Pontiac, they don't even have Pontiacs anymore, dang it. That is your Pontiac game-changing play of the year. Oh, man, that was I mean, this wasn't a national championship game or anything, but it was Auburn, Florida. And again, I think people today maybe don't understand, except for the older ones, how big every Auburn, Florida game was. And I'll tell you right now, when I hear people today say that Georgia's a bigger rival to us than Alabama, I'm like, I used to think Florida was a bigger rival than Georgia. Because the Georgia games, we beat them like two out of every 3 years, it seemed like, in our day. Whereas the Florida game, you never knew what was going to happen in Auburn-Florida game. You just never knew. You could get one of those defensive struggles like 10-7, or you could get, you know, 36-33 or 59-38 or whatever it was. I mean, you just never knew. 48-7. So I always thought the Florida game was our second biggest game of the year after the Iron Bowl. How did you see it?
I mean, I don't think you thought about it in terms of like Florida's a rivalry that way, but you just thought like for us at that time, they were a more dangerous opponent and the game itself was more unpredictable.
Yeah.
Much less sense about what was going to happen. And it is, I mean, the Florida rivalry is big and it was great to have them back on campus again with game day and stuff. It was a huge moment for Auburn. And I think in the second half, they really started to take advantage of it, turn it on.
Yeah, I would say that after I moved to Georgia and lived in Atlanta for 11 years, and then we started losing to Georgia all the time, those two things made me, you know, push Georgia back up the scale more. But when I lived in Alabama, had never lived in Georgia, I looked forward to the Florida game as one of the big games of the year, way more than the Georgia game. That's just straight up how I looked at Georgia's like, oh, we're playing Georgia. That's going to be a boring game. We're going to play Florida. Oh, man, that's going to be some fireworks, you know. So that's just how it was in the 80s and in the early 90s all the way up to this game. So, okay, so we blocked that punt. We take it in. It happened. I noted here it happened much earlier in the game than I remembered. I always wanted to think of this as being at the end, but I think I'm conflating it with the hook and ladder fumble at the end. And there's also another defensive play at the end, close to the end, that's really big too. I noted I also really miss Pontiacs. I would so have a Trans Am right now if I could. So it's 18-17 Auburn with 10:51 to go in the third quarter. I don't believe Florida scores again, do they?
They do not.
Yeah, crazy. So if you feel like if Auburn can be in the lead at this point, despite everything going horribly wrong, I mean, the sacks in the red zone, settling for the field goals, you know, we've just made so many mistakes and we're still in the lead. then just imagine if we can get our act together. Now, we really never do get our act together, but we keep doing important little key plays that would determine the game. So, again, Florida once again starts the 20. Good old John Vaughn.
Well, and, I got to say this before we get into the next series. This has been described by many, many people who were at that game to me as the second loudest that Jordan Hare has been other than the kick six moment. That this Trey Smith block punt return.
I do remember thinking that it was awfully loud. But, I mean, I've been at a lot, just like you, I've been at a lot of loud Auburn games. So, I mean, the 93 Florida game, the 94 interception game, the 87 Florida game on Halloween night. I mean, there have been, God, the 97 Iron Bowl where they fumbled and we had to kick the field goal at the end was just insane. I mean, I've been to a lot of really loud Auburn games. But, yeah, this one was definitely the crowd. It was nighttime by this point. The crowd was really in it. It was a huge game. We hated Florida. We hated Tebow. We hated Urban Meyer. And, and we were frustrated from losing that Arkansas game. It was definitely – there was a lot of frustration coming out on Florida, against Florida. And Holly Rowe noted it was so loud that you could feel it in your chest. I thought that was cool. Said Florida had been practicing the silent snap count. We'll see if that works. So Quentin Groves and company get a big sack on, I guess, Leak, and they have to punt again. They get the punt off this time. But now Auburn starts at our 40. So Florida's now had the ball twice without us having it to this point. The first time the special team scored a touchdown for us, the second time we started our own 40. So you can see the game starting to tilt our way a little bit now. Cox has not yet thrown a pass more than 15 yards downfield, which I think really shows you he's not healthy. His leg, you know, he can't really plant very well. He's just kind of dinking and dunking. But we get across midfield, the 49. Brad Lester has some tough runs, doesn't get a lot. Courtney Taylor gets down to the 41 on a third down, but the pass was too low, so we have to punt. So Florida, again, at their own 20. This is sound like the same song, same verse of the different song or whatever. Now they got Leak and Tebow in at the same time with Tebow as a decoy wide receiver. So Urban Meyer really is just throwing crap at the wall to see if anything will stick at this point, and it's not really working. But they're not running. Tebow in comes for the quarterback, tries to run and get stuffed. I remember them saying that they didn't think they'd seen that before that year. Tebow just getting stuffed, not for anything.
So good.
So they punt for the third time. So we're at our own 17. Man, Preche Rodriguez has a long pass in his hands and drops it. That would have been huge. But then Kenny Irons, with a great block by Carl Stewart, gets up to the Auburn 36, and that's going to get us out of the third quarter. Here we go with the final quarter, and the craziness isn't over yet. So Brad Lester gets a first down, but he's short, but a personal foul in Florida, most penalized team in the SEC. For a late hit on Cox.
It really bit him in this game.
It's
a good stat you keep putting out there because they were it again and again in this game.
How many times has Florida blown games against us with a bunch of personal foul penalties? It happened with Spurrier every dang year.
Yeah.
Even in the games that he would beat us, they'd still have 150 yards in personal fouls before the game was over. So Florida's been chasing Cox the entire time, hitting him, knocking him down, and they finally got called for a late. So we're at the Florida 41. We get a great pass to Rod Smith in a first down, but we get a motion penalty. And so Cox is throwing at the receiver's feet, and it's fourth down, and we punt. And again, I mean, over and over in this game, our offense would be just like right there, and then and that was pretty much the offense, this team's offense the entire season. I mean, if you go back and look at I didn't do it for this one like I have done, but you know, this team did not score a lot of points on a lot of teams. There might have been a couple of games with weak defenses that we rang up a bunch of points. But I've said it before, John, the 2006 Auburn team was a team that scored most of its touchdowns on short fields. I mean, I think we scored two touchdowns against Alabama in the Iron Bowl this year, and it was because the Alabama fumbled on like their own 20 twice.
Yeah. It's just showing that decline in the offense, no big play ability. We can't do any deep strikes, no big plays. It's got to be grinded out.
And hope that the defense and special teams can give you a favorable position. So Florida's at their own 10. There's 12:40 to go in the game. Leak back there has all day to throw now. They're getting good protection. He gets a pass to Dallas Baker for 33 yards. David Irons just misses an interception. Then Caldwell for Florida has a good run down to the Auburn 27. He has another run to the 18, gets a face mask tacked on. So we're only winning 18-17, and Florida is now on our 13-yard line. They have a pass to the 8. They're tight end. Tebow comes in and gets stopped for 2. So Florida is now on our 6-yard line, trailing by 1. And then comes another huge controversial play. All right, so let me quickly sketch it, and then you talk about what you saw, okay?
Right.
This is the famous play where Chris Leak goes, drops back, and Trey Blackmon, little ball of hate, comes charging up the middle at him. He's hitting him, and as Leak is kind of stumbling backwards, his hand goes forward, and the ball falls straight down. Now, if you go by his hand movement, it's an incomplete pass. If you go by the ball movement, it's a fumble, and that's what they're supposed to go by. So they call it a fumble. Blackmon picks it up and runs all the way back to the Florida 38, and it gets reviewed, and the fumble stands. So what did you see here?
This was a huge play, and Urban Meyer is probably still whining about this play.
Yes.
He whined about it after the game, and he's probably still futzing about it now. So the big complaint was that Leak's arm was moving forward, and therefore was incomplete. I think, you know, Blackman's all over him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the arm motion was more a reaction to Blackmon coming into him than Leak trying to throw the ball. So I get it. It should have been reviewed or whatever. And I understand why it's controversial for some people, but I didn't think it was incomplete. What did you think?
No, I agree. I think his arm motion was after the ball was already out. I think the ball would have gone forward if it had been in his hand when he was moving his arm forward, and instead you see the ball just drop like a rock straight down. So when the ball comes out and goes straight down, to me, there's no pass there.
That's a
drop. So, yeah, so we get it at the 38. Florida has no timeouts left. There's about 8 minutes to go. Cox hits Robert Dunn, haven't called his name yet, down to the Florida 41. Well, I guess we must have lost yards or something there for a second. Lester runs down to the 33. Again, Brad Lester keeps having these like 8-yard runs up the middle, like once per drive. And it kind of makes you wonder. But then on third and short, he gets stuffed. And on fourth down, he goes up the middle again and gets the first down. So we're running the clock now, runs up the middle, inside of 4 minutes to go. The time of possession now is 33 minutes for Auburn, 22 minutes for Florida. We're continuing to dominate the time of possession. We're not double anymore, but we're dominating. And then, this is kind of shocking. What does John Vaughn do, John?
Completely misses a wide open field.
Just, oh, it's a chip shot. Man. How do you miss that, Vaughn? He must have thought he was in Baton Rouge for a second.
I was going to say, I think all Auburn fans had that same thought at that moment. Here we go again.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how Vaughn is still there in 06. Who's – how is he – wasn't 2002 his first year? Maybe it was three. I guess it was three. Yeah, I guess it was three. All right, anyway. We brought all those receivers in 02. I figured we brought our punter and our kicker in that year, too. I think they came in 03. I remember they were big deals when they came in their first year. They both came from like Tennessee, from mm-hmm. Brentwood, Tennessee, Nashville area, where I like to stop and get Corky's barbecue when I go through there. So Florida just needs a field goal. At this point, it's still 18-17, right? I mean, I don't think we've scored.
Yep.
So on the first play, Leak drops back and hits a wide open Eric Brock. The problem is Eric Brock plays for Auburn. Again, you put pressure on Chris Leak, he will make mistakes. So he threw it over the middle short, right to Eric Brock. So now Auburn sets up shop at the Florida 31. We try to run up the middle and run the clock, but Brad Lester gets blown up by that tough Florida defensive front. But now we're inside of 2 minutes. We run the clock some more. This is where Holly Rowe reports that at halftime, Tuberville went over to the Auburn defense and screamed at him, "You're scared of Florida. If you won't hit them, I'll go find somebody that will." That doesn't sound like Tuberville, does it?
It doesn't, but I read this story a lot about this game that he challenged the defense at halftime. that Florida was kind of coming after us and pushing us around, and the defense wasn't being aggressive and going after him. And he challenged the defense, like, I want you to go hit them and go after them and you know, play like the kind of Auburn defense we know you are. And they went out and did it.
It
really was a turning of a switch on.
Yeah. I wish he'd said that during the Arkansas game. We might have been playing for the national championship, man. Dang it.
You can't pull that card every week, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's like those soccer managers in England that they say that only their only card they have to play is kick over the tables, you know, and throw the chairs around at halftime. It's like once you've done that a couple of times, where do you go?
There's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere else to go, right?
You got to save that for the big moment, and Tuberville did it here.
Yes, right. So it's why he would lose the mediocre game and then come out and blow out, you know, beat the number one or number two team. It was so weird how he did that. We would absolutely do that year after year. This is not anywhere near the first time. So, and it would often be Florida. You know, we would lose to somebody else, then come out and beat Florida. We did it in like 2001. Remember, we were 7-5. We were 7-5 in 2001, and we beat number one Florida. I heard that was
a great game.
I was listening to some podcast of the day, and I forgot who it was, and they were saying the 2001 Florida might have been their best team. And I'm like, they lost to 7-5 Auburn. They're their best team. Good gosh, but I take it. All right, so there's 1 minute to go. Lester down to the 22. Vaughn comes out, and he makes the field goal. And so now it's 21. We sure found a weird way to get to 21 points in this game. We did not take the conventional route. That's field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal.
Safety,
some more stuff. Did we get it? We got a defensive. How did we get the other? I don't know. I give up.
The punt.
Oh, the block punt, right, special teams. I forgot special teams. So, all right, so now Florida has to go score a touchdown. It changes the way we're going to play defense because we don't have to keep them away from field goal range. So it's 21-17 with 31 seconds to go. Florida again starts their own 20. Way to go, Vaughn. Marquise Gunn fought his way to Chris Leak and batted down the pass before it could get going. Incomplete to Baker, 11 seconds to go. Another incomplete to Dallas Baker, 5 seconds to go. And on 4th and 10 on the Florida 20, Chris Leak throws the ball, and the guy catches it, and they start doing the hook and ladder. But the last Gator to touch it fumbles, and Patrick Lee, Auburn defensive back, who we'd see a few more times in his career, he had a pretty good career for us, picked the ball up and ran it in for a touchdown, kind of like Andre Bruce at the end of the Georgia Tech game. As time expires, 20, no extra point, 27 to 17. No offensive touchdowns. It's very reminiscent of the interception game, just in a weirder, more spread out way. But 27 points off of a special teams touchdown, a defensive touchdown, a safety, and a whole bunch of field goals. Wow. So I have the points broken down right here, and then I want to hear your thoughts. We got 7 from a punt block, 6 from a fumble return, 2 from a safety, and 12 from field goals. That's crazy. So, all right, what do you
think? That's a hard way to win a football game against a good team.
That's 27 the hard way.
Yes.
That's what they'd say in Vegas. Right. Yes. So what do you think? I mean, we'll go through the stats in just a second, but I mean, just in terms of the visceral winning this game.
I think it's one of those games where, like, the Auburn defense and special teams, like, took it from Florida. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Florida kind of had it in the first half. They were moving the ball on us. They were scoring. They were, you know, shutting us down in the red zone. And then our defensive special team literally, like, went and took it away from them in the second half.
Yes.
And Florida did nothing. Just zero out in the second half.
No, that's right.
And Auburn made stuff happen, and those other units made stuff happen. I think Patrick Lee may have been one of the guys in on the punt block, too. So he had a gigantic game.
He did.
Brock, a big interception. Groves and Gunn and these other guys were all over Leak the whole night. You were talking earlier about you didn't think he completed that many passes. He was 9 for 17.
Wow. Barely 50%.
108 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception.
And a key fumble, too.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that
wow.
was huge.
You know, this reminds me of the most probably controversial thing I've ever said on our show, which was last year when I said our defense is great, but I need them to be greater. people got so bent out of shape. I've talked about this before. People got so bent out of shape, I'm disrespecting our great defense. I'm like, no. I kept saying our defense was great last year, but that doesn't win ball games. If the offense isn't getting it done, then it doesn't matter how great your defense is. You're still going to lose unless the defense can find even more ways to be great, right? That was my point. I don't think people quite grasped the concept there so well, but maybe I just did a poor job of explaining it. But what I was saying, that applies here too, right? That the offense, in a weird kind of way, it's the offense though here. The offense in this game did enough to keep Florida from having the ball every couple of seconds, right? The offense did enough in a lot of ways. The way that they failed to do enough was scoring, right? The offense in this game did everything they needed to do except actually score. Touchdowns. They got, four field goals. And so it fell to the defense. That was a very good defense. And the special teams, it was a very good special teams. It fell to them to find other ways to supplement what the offense was not doing. And they did.
Yes.
Well, here's the stats. Rushing yards, Auburn 133, Florida 171. But as you pointed out a while ago, a lot of Florida's 171 was a couple of plays.
Yeah.
So if you take away all those Cox sacks, it was pretty close in rushing yards, I would guess. They were, neither team had a great rushing game, but they were both respectable. And in passing, Auburn had 182. The great Chris Leak and Tim Tebow together had 108. So that's a huge problem right there for Florida. Total yards, 315 for Auburn, 279 for Florida. So Auburn wins the time of possession, the total yards, the penalties, everything. Even the first downs, 19-18 Auburn. And the time of possession, Florida made a little dent in it before it was over, but ultimately it was 36 and change for Auburn, 23 and change for Florida. So this was a game where Auburn's offense just held the ball, didn't get in the end zone ever, but kept Florida from having the ball very much and just played keep away for most of the game.
Yes, and I think to follow up on your time of possession point, Auburn had ran 67 plays and Florida ran 45.
Wow.
45 is very few plays for a college football game, even in that era. It's not a lot.
Right. Doesn't Gus like to run 80 or something?
Yes. And Florida lost this game. They averaged 6.2 yards per play. Averaged 6 yards every time they snapped the ball, and they lost.
In this game, they averaged six?
Yes.
Wow. Well, I was going to say, in this part of it is this. In the second half, Florida made 96 total yards.
Mm-hmm. Again, we talked about in the first half how things were going and how they were kind of shutting us down and all that kind of stuff. Here's the drive charts for Florida in the second half, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm gonna read the whole game just real quick so you get the idea of how it shifted.
Okay.
It starts out for Florida, field goal, touchdown, safety, touchdown, and then it's halftime.
That's not bad. Okay?
They only had the ball four times.
I was going to say, it's not many times, but at least the things that were happening were good things for the most part. Yeah.
So, I mean, they had the ball five times, but one of them was immediately a safety, and the other one was immediately halftime. So, really, only three drives in the first half.
That's
Here's
crazy.
The second half. Punt, 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 fumble, interception, fumble.
Ooh. 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 That's ugly.
Mm-hmm.
That is not pretty. Wow. And yeah, so.
And the only drive of any real substance is the one that they had to – that we had. We talked about the – the Trey Blackman caused fumble.
I mean, compare the first half and the second half. It sounded like they had the ball more times in the second half, but they couldn't do anything with it.
That's right.
All right. So after this game, Auburn had beaten a top 10 team for the 8th time in 9 tries, which is insane. We were ranked number 2 the week before when we lost to Arkansas. This week we were ranked number 11. Florida took our spot at number 2, which is funny because we turned right around and beat them and moved up to number 8. We would climb as high as number 5 later in the year before we lost to Georgia, and we ended the season number 10 in the Cotton Bowl against beating Nebraska. This was not a very good Nebraska team. But at this point in the season, we were 6-1. We had beaten number 6 LSU and number 2 Florida, along with Washington State, Mississippi State, Buffalo, and South Carolina in that weird South. Yeah, the week before the Arkansas game we lost was that South Carolina game where we had the ball the entire third quarter, and South Carolina almost had the ball the entire fourth quarter. That was such a strange game. We would go on to beat Tulane, Ole Miss, and Arkansas State before losing to Georgia. And then, of course, we beat Alabama in, I guess, was this this must have been the last Mike Shula Alabama team in 06, yes. And yep. Saban comes in 07. Yeah. And then we would win the Cotton Bowl over Nebraska. It's always good to close the year out beating Alabama and Nebraska as well as Florida, so not – and LSU. Now, we came so close that year. This is a year that we beat LSU, Florida, and Alabama, as well as Nebraska. I mean, you can't say that about many years in Auburn history. We beat three of those big teams and, like, a Nebraska. If we had just beaten Arkansas and Georgia, oh, how sweet it would have been.
Or just one of them.
Yeah.
If we beat either one of them, it would have been, you know, kind of a different situation.
Man, if we had beaten Arkansas that year and gone in and lost to Georgia, we would remember that Georgia game in 06 as one of the worst losses in Auburn history.
Yes.
Because we would be 12-1. And, I mean, it wasn't even close. They beat the stew out of us. We lost to Georgia that year 15-37. That was crazy. But that would be considered one of the worst losses in Auburn history because it would have kept us out of probably the national championship game.
Yeah. And the other thing is, We talked about this game a lot tonight, but Auburn beat this team in this manner, and then Florida went on to have a great season.
Did they not win the national championship this year?
They won the national championship this season.
Yeah, this is the only team they lost.
This was their only loss, and to lose it in this manner is just weird.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Florida's never gone undefeated because we beat them this year, and Ole Miss beat them that one year, and then when they won the national championship in 08, they had lost, I believe, to LSU, I want to say.
Yeah. And then when they won it with Spurrier, they had lost a regular season game.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That 96 team, yeah, they lost. So, yeah, I don't think they've ever gone undefeated. And we're part of the reason why. I love it because we go undefeated every other year, it seems like, when nobody's looking. So, do we have any listener questions for this week before we wrap up?
No, just a lot of comments about how people enjoyed the game, how loud it was, and how much fun that game was.
Yeah. So. Oh, I agree. I'm glad I went. I would have loved to have been at the 1-07. I almost wish we could have time. We could talk a little bit about that one. But I want to mention this, though. So Florida was so mad about losing this game, the only blemish on their national championship year. But they knew that they had us in the swamp the next year, and they were going to kill us, right? So we went down to play them in 07, and that was the year that Byram hits the field goal twice at the end.
Does the chalk.
Yeah, and this was a four-loss Auburn team ultimately, but we went down to number 4 Florida and beat them 20-17, and this is why we are always going to be 2-0 against Florida with Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow, because they never – Emmitt Smith never beat us, and Tim Tebow never beat us.
That's so good.
It is absolutely amazing. It's absolutely amazing. It's like if we could say that Alabama never beat us with Joe Namath or Ken Stabler. That would be so sweet, you know. But Florida never beat us with their two of their greatest players. So, all right. Well, any final thoughts about this game? I guess you want to mention if anybody has any suggestions. We're always looking for like a really good game we haven't thought of, right?
Yes, but we have an idea for our next show. Mm-hmm. Can we put it out there?
Yeah, tell them what we're going to do. This is neat.
So we're going to do famous tie games of Auburn history.
We got it. We're just doing them all at once, right? I mean, we wouldn't subject you to a tie game by itself, but we're going to look at like why it happened and is it a good tie or a bad tie?
Is it a tie that feels like a win or a tie that feels like a loss? Or a tie that feels like a tie?
Because there's definitely all those. Yes, there's definitely all of those. So I guess that means there won't be any games after 1995, right? That was the last year without overtime. Right. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. I have to do some serious research. And if anybody remembers a tie, I mean, we know there's the Tennessee game in 90. We know there's the Syracuse Sugar Bowl. There was, you know, but if there's any that you can think of that we, that, you know, I don't think we want to go all the way back to the Bacardi Bowl against Villanova. No. No. But, you know, relatively modern. We'll look into it. So, all right. Well, that'll be a whole lot of fun. So I guess we will wrap up here. So did I ask you any final thoughts?
No, other than this was just a really a fun, dramatic game and a great home win and a great atmosphere.
Really was. All right. Well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.